boy, have we got a treat for you.
We've got a really special episode for you guys this week.
Last Friday, we were part of a virtual panel for Ice and Fire Con. It was Hannah, myself, and Lady Gwen from Radio Westeros. And it was their Halloween special for the year. And we're releasing it today as a podcast episode because it was a blast. And they said we could. And we loved it.
Yeah, it was so much fun. Zach and I were in the same place celebrating Halloween, which is really awesome. And then we called Lady Gwen and we talked for an hour. The title of the panel was A Song of Ice and Fire's Warm Bodies. So we basically talked about zombies in A Song of Ice and Fire. And it was really fun. It was like a little bit more low-key than what we usually do. And we just had a good time talking about some of the different Halloween creepy things in A Song of Ice and Fire.
If we're lucky next year, we should be able to do the con as normal and hang out with everyone in Mount Sterling, Ohio at Deer Creek Lodge on April 22nd through 25th for Ice and Fire Con and do this stuff in person. But it was fun to be able to do it digitally for now. But if you have any interest in going whatsoever next year, hopefully it happens. You can go then.
Yeah. And if you want to check out some of their other content, they've done a couple other panels that have already happened. You were on one a couple weeks ago.
There's
a couple more. Yeah, there's a couple more coming up, I think, in November. So you can find those on the Ice and Fire Con YouTube channel. And you can find the video of this as well if you wanted to see Zach's costume and my glow sticks.
Iceandfirecon.com is where you can get all that info. And thanks to all of them for inviting us and letting us be a part of everything for these past few years. It's been awesome. And we look forward to many more.
Enjoy the panel.
Goodbye.
All right. We are live. Thank you guys for joining the Warm Bodies in ASWAF virtual panel. I'm Tara. I am the organizer of Ice and Fire Con. I am just here to bring this all together, and then I'm going to bow out for the virtual panel itself and just come back in at the end to say goodbye. But thank you again for Lady Gwen from Radio Westeros, sorry, and Hannah and Zach from Game of Owns for joining us. You guys feel free to introduce yourself and then dive into this topic of the undead and have fun, and I'll see you in about an hour.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Excited to be here.
Lady Gwen.
I love the glasses.
Yeah, what's going on? What would you call it? You said it was a motley?
I don't know. It's just stuff that I have.
What does George mean when he says motley? You know?
It's like clothes that are, you know, like patched together, sewn together. So yeah. The glasses aren't really going to work for very long because I can't see anything.
I like the nose look. That's good too.
Me too. That's good for the beginning. That was for effect. Now I'm just going to wear my actual glasses so I can see what's happening.
That was a short-lived, like, part of your costume just there. Like, it left quickly.
Yeah. I mean, if I didn't have to read anything or look at people, you know, they would have lasted a lot longer. But, no, we're here to, you know, talk to each other and everybody else about zombies. Hey, everybody.
The night before Halloween.
Yeah, so
it's
here we are.
Spooky.
I'm really excited for this. I wanted to have this conversation in general for a long time, so I'm so glad we got to do it with you.
Thank you. It's me too. Very excited for this. And we have a lot of good, you know, we've got some good things to talk about, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of
things to talk about.
I feel like there keeps, like, I keep adding to the list as you I'm, like, just, reading through. I was just adding to
She was going through just now, like, five different details of, like, underneath five different details about fire whites, like, talking about their physical representations. It's like, we're going too deep right now. We have to work through this with her on the panel. That's the point of the panel. It's what we're going to talk about.
There's just so much that we don't know. I mean, so, zombies, really, I guess, you know, when you talk about them in A Song of Ice and Fire, there's just so many things that we just don't know, and a lot of questions when we talk about, like, end game type of stuff, and we'll get into people like John coming back to life, Melisandre's role, all these kinds of things. There's so many questions that we have left open on this topic, so I think it's really interesting because there's not a lot of, there's us, like, reading through a couple of highlights of, like, important things that have happened in the series so far, but most of it just leads to a lot of open-ended questions, and so when we think about, like, the others and Hard Home happening, and you know, so we'll get into all of that, but
we will.
Yeah, are there any questions that I really loved what you just said, and that makes me really appreciate the point in the story that we're currently at right now with two books left. Are there any questions that you feel like could be in that category, but now being as far as we are into the series that you've got like solid answers on?
Do we have solid answers on anything?
About
yeah.
the undead, about
like, whatever you say
the
now.
The Lord of Light side, about the ice side of things. Like either way, because we've gotten different degrees of answers, like small reveals within these POV chapters of
right,
like applying contextual clues from other ones that we've read and gotten direct answers from things like Lady Stoneheart, and then later what's happening mm-hmm. to Vic in the Dance of Dragons, and are able to piece all this stuff together. Do you feel like, with that being said, with the context? Without even going to the sample chapters, but we can talk about them if you want to. Do you feel like there's anything that you're like, aha, I kind of clearly see where this is going? Because we can go as far back as all the lore mentioned in Raventree and start to fill in the pieces as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering like where you stand on it, because we haven't actually talked about this yet. My hood keeps slipping.
No, I feel like there's just still so many questions. Like actually when we get down to some of the, I just have questions about everything. There's basically three different kinds of zombies, right? There's fire, there's ice, and then there's Gregor.
Right.
Robert Strong.
Qyburn thing.
The Qyburn stuff, which I have questions about all of it. I just want to know how it all works.
I think that's a good place to start, though, because like you said, we've got these fire whites, we got the ice side. And I think we like sort of understand like a little bit of the mechanics of that a little bit. Like we've mm-hmm. got, some background into different people who are using those type of magic. But when it comes to, Qyburn and whatever he's doing with whatever he's doing, as far as you know, he's just a normal guy. Like he's just a guy out here, whether it's necromancy or whether it's like some sort of sorcery that he's got going. Mm-hmm. And we don't quite yet know what Ungregor is, but whatever he's doing, we're not sure if it, is it magical? Is it like science? I don't know.
That's the thing. So I think with the other things, the answers we have, even if we don't really understand them, it's like, oh, you have fire whites, which are created with fire magic, or the ice, the others whites are created with ice magic. Yeah. And there's, so there's sort of, even though we don't really know all the mechanics of it, we get the kind of the system that's happening. Gregor, you know, or Qyburn, he's kind of like a mad scientist. He's, you know, Dr. Frankenstein. And, you know, what is he doing? Is he just stitching bits of dead bodies together? Like how does he manage to animate the dead? Because I think, I don't know, do you guys think Gregor was literally actually dead and then revived?
I think that's a good question, because there's theories, you know, that like his head was sent to Dorne. So like, mm-hmm. or his head wasn't sent to Dorne.
Yeah.
So if he's like this headless guy, or if he has one, or if he just was like severely hurt and somehow like coaxed back to life. I mean, I love the idea as we're like thinking about like Cleganebowl, which this is obviously where the conversation is going to go with this. As we think about that trajectory, I love the idea of having this otherworldly thing that mm-hmm. is unfamiliar, can't theoretically be defeated, and that feels like such a Cersei thing to like have by her side as the rest of the world is crumbling. I love the thought of it being some sort of like otherworldly thing.
And different than the two big ones, like this whole third category.
Yeah, and Qyburn being able to bring something back to life like that through whatever powers he has, I think would be such an interesting concept, just because we don't know a lot about how whatever he's doing works. And so
it seems almost more science-y, which I think I mean, I was reading a bit about Frankenstein, because we're doing a stream tomorrow night too on Radio Westeros, and so I was reading about all this stuff a lot this week, and read about Frankenstein, and his whole thing seems to have been more, you know, it wasn't really black magic or necromancy. It was kind of science. Like he discovered some scientific process that allowed him to reanimate the dead. And
it would be confusing to other people at the time, and it would seem like he was performing some kind of a magic, but it was because he was doing things on a level that they didn't understand, like biologically. Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think within that, he was interested in sort of like chemistry, and he did all these kind of weird chemical experiments. So, you know, is that Qyburn, who claims that he knows more about the nature of death than anyone at the Citadel? Is he just...
Does he resurrect, does he create the monster using like a charge to the nervous system of dead flesh? Is that what it is? I've actually never read the novel.
I actually couldn't remember. And what I was reading last night said that it's left sort of vague. Like it talks about all of his experiments, but then how it happens. And if there's anybody else out there that knows better than that, correct me. But yeah, it just.
Interesting. We don't know of any lightning rod stuff in King's Landing right now with Gregor or Qyburn or anything. And I feel like being in the depths of King's Landing would also not be the best place to be able to channel some of that. But there could be something for that. Could be something.
Right. We just don't know.
I don't know what kind of poison specifically was used on him from Oberyn Spear. So I really can't say whether or not, like, how deep Gregor was taken into his
state of disrepair. It sounds like it was pretty nasty, though.
I'm sure it was. Let's say he was completely dead. Let's just go on that train. Is Qyburn really downstairs performing necromancy for real?
Yeah.
And what does that mean in the context of A Song of Ice and Fire, truly? Because, like, what are the creepiest insights into that have we really gotten? Are we talking about, like, things we've seen in Carth?
Horrifying stuff. Like, he's doing experiments with all these women. You know, Cersei keeps giving him females to do experiments on. He takes Sennel, her maid, there's a couple of puppeteers, and eventually, what's her name? Felice Stokeworth. And, you know, we don't really know what he's doing, but it's it's implied that it's pretty horrific. And I don't know if it's related to what he's doing with Robert Strong, because that all predates that.
It seems creepy to me that it would be girls. That he's just taking a bunch of ladies down there. He's like, I need them for my specific experimentation. It's like, he might just understand molecular, like microbiology, better than everyone else on some level as far as maesters are concerned. He's just getting a free supply of whatever girls he wants down the basement as well. The basement just sounds like a good way to describe it, even though it's a little bit more specific, a little bit more medieval.
Yes, exactly. So weird.
I'm glad we have that dark horse, though, in the series, because it seems like on a fantasy level that the Lord of Light stuff, and then the way he contextualizes the, let's call it like the White Walker technology, I really love through the lens of, I know that R'hllor is mentioned from, I believe, the first chapter after the epilogue. Yeah. I feel like he's Lord of Light is mentioned in Daenerys' first chapter. So it's like a part of the story, but I think it easily glossed over in some way because it's like, this can't be that important because we have all these characters to worry about. But through the lens of the Lord of Light, R'hllor, this technology of Fire Whites, whether or not it's affected or Jon Snow is affected by it, but we know a lot of characters are, I think that's really neat how he worked that in. And then a little bit less, I think, subtle, but still really cool through the White Walkers. But I think that what's going on with Gregor, if we end up getting like a bigger picture of that through Qyburn or whatever, might end up being the most subtle sort of like multi-book explanation, like blossom of this weird kind of magic or technology within the story versus everything else, which is so interesting. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how it works. But you think it's just, what do you think? I know that Lady Gwen said it was probably just healing of some sort. What do you think? You think it's magic? Do you think he's actually?
No, I like the idea that it's like this healing, more like science-y kind of.
It's not like chanting and sacrificing those women.
Yeah, because it brings like another side of what it means to like, what's the word? It's another way to manipulate the universe almost. You know what I mean? Except for you're just using like science to practice. The practice through like scientific, I know nothing about science, but anyway, but like, so
plant medicine,
right? Exactly.
So natural remedies.
I like the idea that it's like another side of being able to, you know, manipulate the universe around you, but instead of something magical, it's something worldly, which I think like adds another depth.
So what if, like, listen, I think the sand snakes, one of them says that, you know, the poison that was used on Gregor, I think it's manticore venom, but he had done something to it, thickened it or something.
Made it worse. It's already bad enough.
Poisel says it was something where, you know, it was altered somehow, maybe with magic or some other process that would draw out the suffering. Cause I think manticore venom on its own is supposed to be just instant death. So whatever it was, well, let's say that it somehow polluted his blood, because Qyburn at one point tells Cersei that his blood is turned black and, you know, thick and it's kind of, something weird is going on with his blood. His blood has been poisoned, basically. Maybe it's something as simple as what he needs these women for is he's like doing a blood transfusion.
Right,
right.
Sucking all their blood out and taking the bad blood out of Gregor and giving him all this fresh new blood.
That's a good idea. Well, if you look at like what scientific thought was around that time, you would think leeches. It all came, yeah, like bloodletting and leeches and stuff. I mean, everything boiled down to what your blood was like at the time. And so, you know, they used to like bloodlet people until they were basically killed them because of the loss of blood and not because of what was happening.
Also, but they got addicted to that feeling. They're like, let me get a little bit, I got a headache right now.
Sure. But like, so I could see, you know, that working at this, in this, that mindset.
Does Taylor Swift have a song about that? Bad blood?
She does. We can get into that later.
Bad blood. Yes. I forgot about that detail though, about Gregor's blood becoming like, glutinous and black. So manticore venom is like something with the, like, I know the word hemoglobin, it sounds sciency, but I guess the hemoglobin becomes thick. The cells like slow down.
But my question though is if Gregor's like reanimated, whatever that means, does that mean, I know we look at like Firewhites and others, we know that like blood doesn't really flow through their veins. Mm-hmm. Like, and so whatever Gregor's reanimation is, does he need blood to flow through his veins in order to be able to function and like live, or is it something else?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So has his blood been replaced or does he now need like a fresh supply? Is there this?
Like a vampire.
Like he's gotta feed him. Right. Or something, you know.
Can you imagine? It's like having a Tesla. I guess it's just like having a gas car.
Plugging in.
Just gotta charge it. Yeah.
Same thing either way. But we're the same way with food. I mean, we just have like this like circulatory system that replenishes it. So maybe they take the ability away by actually dying. So does anyone know? And I'm not reading the chat, but maybe you guys could talk amongst yourself about this. If anyone knows the answer, is there any kind of replenishing mechanism for both sides of what we've been talking about, whether it's fire and ice and the sort of undead category, whether or not they're finding a new way? The stream I was on last week, we talked about whether or not the White Walkers might do some kind of zombie fashion of like eating dead bodies or something. You basically said, no, that doesn't happen, but wouldn't that be neat? We don't technically know if they do or not. There's nothing like that from the lore, right? Lord of what?
Like something to replenish? I don't really understand what the question is.
Like how do they keep going? Like what's the fuel behind their fire essentially?
Their faith in their god.
So like how do you keep them?
I don't know.
The faith. Well, that's good.
Maybe we could get some insight from what George says.
That's a good source, I think, for this.
Fire whites. You want to move on to fire whites? Because we got a great quote of George, which actually it kind of answers these questions maybe in terms of the fire whites anyways. And this was back in 2017. So it's before season 7, but after season 6, in which John was resurrected at the beginning of season 6. The show, and he was kind of talking about all of that, John being resurrected. And so he says, poor Beric Dondarrion, who is set up as foreshadowing of all this, every time he's a little less Beric, his memories are fading. He's got all these scars. He's becoming more and more physically hideous because he's not a living human being anymore. His heart isn't beating. His blood isn't flowing in his veins. He's a white, but a white animated by fire instead of ice. Now we're getting back to the whole fire and ice thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot there, a lot to unpack in that, but specific to what we were talking about, he's he doesn't have blood. He's got fire.
Right.
So his skin's not healing itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's just kind of, and I guess that's why, you know, you even see the ice others, zombies kind of disintegrating as they go.
That's true.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Their bones are always sticking out in strange ways, even in the description from the book.
Yeah. Like the fresh ones are okay, but the ones that have been dead for.
So if you've been dead for a while, you're probably walking against trees and stuff and like, bits of you are falling off probably from the actual
cold. the way Beric is described at some point is you can still see like marks like all around his neck from when he was hanged and stuff. Like you're still able to see that kind of thing. And so, I think as he deteriorates, as he like loses his self and his like identity and his like internal vibe, then he also like is not able to regenerate, which brings up interesting conversations about somebody like Melisandre, who we see to be also a Firewhite, potentially, maybe, which is a question
I'm
that we
so
can talk about.
I'm so confused by that, by her being a Firewhite.
Yeah, so, like, there's speculation, you know, that Melisandre, just in the way she's described, as, like, a lot of the ways that she's described kind of lines up to some different ways, like, Beric is described. Like, she's, like, heat emanates from her, and she doesn't, like, people don't see her eating, like, things like that.
We don't know Beric or Thoros in this, because Thoros being the Red Priest or whatever, or is Beric is giving off a lot of the same characteristics because he's been so close to it.
No, I think that Beric, so, I think that, sorry, you go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that the connections, you would think that it would be between Thoros and Melisandre initially, just because it's like this very faith-fueled kind of thing.
Sure.
But when it comes down to descriptions and how they're described, like, as beings, Melisandre kind of lines up a little bit more with somebody like Beric in the way that she's described, like, as a person.
Right.
So what that could potentially mean, if she is a Firewhite, what that might mean.
They're both servants of the Lord in their own way, too.
So. And
she's being, I guess, propelled by the same sort of energy that's keeping him alive and presumed death, right? So they would share a lot of the same characteristics.
Yeah. But if she's like, she's very beautiful. So like, if she is a Firewhite, how she's able to kind
maybe
of.
Maybe Beric's a good looking person. We don't know that.
But we see his scar. Like, we hear about his scarring and things like that. Right. And I mean, we don't really hear that from Melisandre.
True.
So.
True.
I don't know.
Maybe he needs one of those necklaces.
Yeah, whatever one of those do. Necklaces are. As we all age.
So they don't age, but also they don't heal. Is that what it is? Or they do age. They're not, or like, maybe it's rapid aging.
I would say they probably don't. They just stay, but they don't do other things that humans, I mean, we age, but we also, our cells regenerate.
You know, it's like they're kind of stuck in time, like stuck in where they were. Mm. This also brings up other questions I had about Catelyn.
I was going to talk about her too. I was going to mention her too, because she's, you know, 3 days dead and she's got this horrific, you know, her throat has been slit and she's got these gashes on her face and it's just horrifying. And basically from the sounds of it, everything is just exactly the way she was when she was pulled out of the water. Can you imagine?
Right. Yeah.
The blood has turned black and her skin is turned kind of like
clammy.
Pudding. This thing is described as pudding. It's just because she's been in the water.
It's like, bring back those and food descriptions when you're talking about Catelyn's dead face, please.
Yes. Can we please find some more cheese and pudding? And,
right.
I don't know.
You think it was weird for her to figure out how to talk by holding the neck flaps closed? You played Lady Stoneheart on stage once in a skit. What was that like? Can you bring back one of the voices?
No.
It's almost Halloween.
It was very embarrassing for me personally because I was terrified. But
you did a great Lady Stoneheart, I think.
Thank you. I think that like, so if they're reanimated where they are in the state that they died in, and if they're reanimated both like in physical form and potentially like mental state, I think that would say a lot about like Catelyn as Lady Stoneheart. I mean, if she's going to look like
and
that always
in that state of conflict,
if that's her state of mind and if she's going to look like that, always, then that's like such a terrifying thing. And I don't know for sure if like the state of mind thing is real. Like, I don't know enough. And one of you guys might know about like Beric's state of mind when he was reanimated for the first time, like how any of that maybe continues on in his personality throughout his time that we see him. But I guess that's a question about like Lady Stoneheart specifically that might help us answer kind of the mechanics of being a Firewhite more.
What do you think about that, Lady Gwen, and whether or not if John is brought back with that same technology, let's call it, him being like a first pass through, how much he'll be affected by it?
Well, I think so here's the interesting thing to me is that statement from George that I read, which basically he flat out says that Beric Dondarrion is foreshadowing of all this, by which he's talking about John's resurrection. Mm-hmm. So if Thoros and Beric foreshadows the sort of Melisandre and John thing, does that mean that, you know, so is just John going to be a Firewhite like Beric, who granted has now been resurrected six times? He's on his seventh life.
Too many times.
And every time he says, I think I have a quote where he says, six times is too many to Thoros. Mm. But basically he's talking about how he's lost everything he was. He says to Thoros, can I dwell on what I scarce remember? I held the castle on the marches once. There was a woman I was pledged to marry, but I could not find that castle today, nor tell you the color of that woman's hair. Who knighted me? What were my favorite foods? It all fades. Sometimes I think I was born on the bloody grass in that grove of ash with the taste of fire in my mouth and a hole in my chest. So that was his first death. He asks Thoros, are you my mother?
Which is funny.
There's a kid's book called
Are You
My Mother? Oh, yeah, I know that one. Small
little bird.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he loses a little bit of himself every time. So I think with John, if he's going to become a Firewhite, just the first time, it doesn't necessarily have to lose a lot of himself, but you know, he could come back very changed.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you think is going to go down? That's what he's definitively going to come back as? Slash, do you even think he's going to come back, or is that curtains for Jon Snow? Could you imagine?
Yeah, the show, like, George R. Martin pivots so hard on the show.
That show.
Yeah,
it's not about fire and ice anymore, it's just about fire.
So, all these statements about Jon and him being, you know, similar to Beric and not having, and the fact that Beric doesn't have blood flowing in his veins, that he's basically animated by fire, rather than by blood. That, I find that very strange in terms of thinking about that in terms of John. And I mean, beyond when that revelation was made 3 years ago, that led to a lot of people discussing John's, abilities, shall we say?
Yeah.
His manly abilities. But I mean, just how does Jon Snow, the hero of the story, go on? Like, what changes for him when he no longer has blood flowing in his veins beyond his abilities?
Right. And like, I think, I mean, we can harp on the show day and night, but one thing that we really didn't get at all is that when John is resurrected, he's basically the same. It doesn't seem to be like, we don't really get to see him changed in any way that we hear from Beric as that, comparison is made. And so, when we talk about like what things might he lose as part of himself that would be detrimental to him as a character, you know, I think about him like losing different memories or losing like personality traits or, if we think
about Arya,
forgetting about that is like the saddest thing I've ever heard in my life. If you forgot about Arya, but him, like, so we going back to Lady Stoneheart, you know, if we're resurrected as a Firewhite in a certain mental state, state of mind, what does that mean for John, and what does that mean for his trajectory? Does that mean that he's going to be? I mean, I can't imagine you would not I can't imagine him not being totally pissed off that he died that way.
Yeah.
And so
I hope he is.
Is that something that is, are we going to see any of that in his personality? When we see him come back.
Yeah. So like with both Beric and Kat come back kind of singularly focused on the thing that was going on in when they died, you know, Beric wants to, he's going to remain doing what he was doing, you know, with his band of outlaws. Well, they weren't outlaws the first time he died, but they quickly became that way.
Same energy though.
And then Kat, you know, obviously is bent on revenge.
Yeah.
So John, what was happening when he was killed? I mean, he was about to go after, after Ramsay Bolton. And he was, you know, killed when the organization that he leads is, you know, revolting against him. So I mean, I'd say those two things are going to have to,
all of those guys, those very specific guys that weren't, I guess, pulling their weight in the right way that he saw fit. It's such an important moment was happening with the entire realm and also letting all the free folk through the wall, decide that it was a good idea in the midst of all that to corner him against the wall and to stab him to death. Is what he'll be coming back into. That's really fucked up, especially when you think about what he thinks is going on with his sister in Winterfell.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So his similar to, you know, Catelyn, who's, I mean, she is bent on revenge, but she also remembers, that her daughters are still out there and, you know, the brotherhood under Lady Stoneheart is looking for Sansa and Arya. So, you know, John could be very single-mindedly, you know, determined to save his sister.
Could you imagine?
You know, could have something to do with the wildlings because they were involved too. I mean, while John's getting stabbed, there's absolute chaos going on around him.
Yeah.
You've got the giant is rampaging, you know, and the wildlings are sure to be joining in with that. And obviously the Queen's men are there and there's just going to be all these factions.
Got Axel Florent.
I don't know if John comes back.
In the wake of John coming back, if he does, he's like, I've been in support of you wholeheartedly the entire time. I've literally never, ever doubted you. Neither has Selyse. Where is she?
Yeah. I don't know.
Where is she?
Right. She's going to be like not leaving her quarters at that moment. Just like, I don't want to address this person after all this. It's going to be so weird. Do you really think, so you guys think that John is going to come back for sure?
I mean, you can't say that John's not coming back.
But I don't know how it's going to happen though. I know we saw it in the show, but it's, everything is so wishy-washy in the show. It's just like Melisandre walks in the room. She cuts his hair. She walks.
We Ghost, get that great shot of John coming back to life.
Sure. And Ghost looks up like he feels something happening in the room, I guess it seems, but kind of like how you were talking about in Frankenstein, where they just kind of avoided giving you the answer of how the technology really works. Yeah, the show did the same thing, where it's like, there's no real answer here. And I'm still confused about
that. We don't really know what the answer is.
Exactly.
Might be,
I don't know how it's going to happen, so I can't really believe in it yet. And it's like, if he came back as ice, like, because there's the whole train of thought of putting him in one of the cells, and eventually he raises as some kind of a white that has like the same kind of spirit that Cold Hands has, where he's able to be himself in some sort of way, or at least have a modicum of humanity in some spectrum versus like a lifeless zombie would. That would be more along the line of John of the North, rather than John being brought back in the same technology as a Beric or a Catelyn or Vic's hand or anyone else that's brought back by Valor. Wouldn't that be a little bit more poetic to the story? But at the same time, there's so many whites and white walkers being brought back by the technology behind the white walkers that I feel like the handful of people we see brought back by Valor would be like somewhat within the ratio of like ice versus fire. But I don't know where John's going to fall in that. And I also don't know how important that is to the story necessarily. Is it all the same thing through a different lens? I think might be the answer at the end of this, at the end of the seven books. I just don't know.
Well, I would say for John specifically, something that we haven't talked about yet is Ghost and kind of Ghost role with John coming back.
For sure.
I think that that could potentially change things or play a major role in who he is as a person when he returns based off of how Ghost is either used or not used, like in that situation. So
I think that's going to be a big factor in it. Like, I don't know exactly how that's going to factor in, but I don't know. I hate to look to the show for clues, but at least Ghost was in the room, and that gave me some kind of good feeling about it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it's a vote in that direction. I don't know. What do you think, though? We haven't talked about this. Maybe you have to, like, give your opinion on a full-fledged episode of Radio Westeros, like, where you're like, all right, it's time. But I feel like I want to get a scoop somewhat. Like, what do you think? How do you think it's going to happen to Jon? Like, I know you think he's going to come back, but how do you think it's going to happen? Is it going to be in the cells, or is it going to be through some kind of magic through Melisandre? Or something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think he might be stored in the cells, you know, because that's where they're storing their bodies these days. He's got a couple of corpses in there that he's waiting to see. He brings these dead wildlings through the wall and puts them in the ice cells.
Yeah.
But they have iron chains on. So they don't rise. You know, he's brought them over to see if they're going to rise like Othar and Jaefer did. And they don't. But the thing that I find interesting about that is that they have iron, which is supposed to, if you go down to the Crypts of Winterfell, all the kings have iron swords in their laps, and it's supposed to keep the dead from rising. So I wonder if Jon gets put into an ice cell without any iron. Maybe he does rise, but I actually tend to think it'll be more Melisandre. I think he might be put there temporarily, and that she raises him. But I could definitely see a version where it's ice, and maybe it just happens, and she's like, wow, what just happened?
You are the guy. I really need to, like, look at the fire and get an idea about what's happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or maybe she'll do something and then it'll still be the ice and she'll think, oh my God, look what I just did in some strange way.
I can do both.
Right.
I mean, maybe that's what the show was trying to do. Like,
right.
She really wasn't doing much, right?
Exactly. No, that's a really good explanation, I think, of that moment. It seemed like there was more to do with just the sort of God behind the TV show, or behind the God mode that involved Ghost somehow. I don't know, because she didn't do anything. We saw everything she did. We had footage of all the screen time, presumably, of her in that room. She didn't do anything.
Yeah, but you think about, well, I was going to answer a question, but this isn't the answer to the question, so never mind. what I was going to say is, we just did on our show an episode, one of Vic's chapters, when Mokoro does all of his magic to his hand, and we get this, like, point of view change where, like, instead of George R. R. Martin telling us, instead of as a point of view character, he tells us what's going on in the room. He like pulls out of the narrative and doesn't tell us what's going on. And so I feel like us seeing magic happen without necessarily understanding the mechanics of it is not something I'm like necessarily caught up in, because there's just a lot that we don't understand. And so what Melisandre can and can't do, whether we like totally understand the mechanics, to me, I don't know. But I think that, like, something interesting as we're thinking about, like, this Thoros, Barrick / Melisandre Jon comparison, if Melisandre brings Jon back to life in whatever way that she does it, is that something that she's going to do multiple times? Like, is Jon just going to be able to become this, like, forever living thing and, like, really put himself out there 24/7 because he knows that Melisandre's got his back?
Wow.
You know, or is this, like, a one-time deal?
Because she's always right, like, yep.
Talk she's about, like ultimate version of Targaryen after all that. What were you going to say?
Yeah, no, I like this idea, which, I mean, I don't necessarily know that this, or think this is the way it's going to happen, but I like this idea of Mel being like the, you know, his personal revivalist. Just follows him along. She's like,
right.
Oh, Battle of the Bastards, you died.
Yeah.
Oh, right. You're back.
Exactly. You know? Jon can just like,
but
be
if
out
you
here.
Follow that through to the conclusion, what Beric did in the end is give up his life for someone.
Right.
Yep.
So, you know, whether Jon gets brought back once or like Beric six times, maybe the comparison is that in the end, he gives that gift of life to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, who could that be? I was speculating to myself the other day, maybe it could be, you know, one of his siblings, Sansa.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know.
That would be beautiful.
Maybe Sansa, because he has all these weird kind of connections with Sansa that people pick up on.
Like what?
And find them somewhat odd. Well, do they just think about each other? Or she thinks about him and there's some, I don't know. There's just some, you get some weird vibes occasionally. There's very slight, but I don't know. Maybe it's building to something that's completely unexpected like that.
I like that idea. I hadn't really actually thought about that, like who he might give his life to at the end.
No, I'm just.
And I also that's what this is for.
Yeah, for sure.
I like the, like, it's an interesting thought as well as like, as John continues to come, if we go this route of like Melisandre just like brings him back to life hundreds of times, like, as somebody who's potentially in like more than likely going to be in a position of power, and he's already in a position of power, how does him losing his ability to be himself, how does that like potentially change the way that he rules or is interacting with people or making decisions and things like that? And that might be something that it's like a realization that I can't keep being reckless and dying because I can't afford to not be John 100% of the time.
Right.
So I've got to like rein it in. So I don't know. Yeah. I think that comes, like, all of that's just going to come back when we understand who John is after he is resurrected and what kind of man he is and how different he is or not different he is, whether that's physically or mentally or, you know, whatever else. But
whatever's going on with him has got to be exacerbated by the connection he has with his direwolf. And I feel like from the evidence that we've gotten, if you could just take it out of context from the first chapter or like the first couple chapters of Game of Thrones, you could think that maybe the direwolves were happenstance. But as we've gotten evidence along the way, it seems like it's a lot more than that. You see that these Stark kids all have different levels of ability connected to some kind of, we call it, I guess, old magic. I feel like that's the only category we have for it right now, because like I said earlier, we don't really have the answer. We have a lot of evidence, but we don't have necessarily answers specifically to what it's going to be, that we can't ignore whatever's going to happen to him being associated somehow or being affected by what's going on with Ghost, being so close by. Also being so important to them. So I'm curious as to how that will shake out. I feel like that might be easy to ignore, but I think it also might be like a really big, sort of obvious part of it. Because it's been so present at this point so far in the story.
Yeah, especially for him specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really all the Stark kids in their own way. Yeah. Except for what's going on with Sansa and Lady, which I guess is poetic in its own way. In a way that I have to really think about.
Right. Yeah, I would say that I would, well, I guess that's, I was going to say I would argue that John's connection with Ghost is like the strongest and most prevalent, but then you look at like Bran and Arya and that's not necessarily true, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I definitely think that that's like a piece that's going to change what we already know, which is very little.
Dude, Robin Grey would be so cool though, as a pair. I don't know, they were taken out of the story in such an unfair way so early, but they were just such a cool pair.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Who?
Robin Greywin.
Oh, yeah. They were more like, you know, it was more like John and Ghost because they had the luxury of being together all the time. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Bran
and
Summer kind of, but they've had this long journey where Summer's off a lot or Bran is actively warging. Summer, which is a different kind of relationship than what you see with John and Ghost and probably Rob and Grey Wind, where they're just more like companions and their warging is probably more of a fluid thing that just happens unconsciously.
Like a dream, like sort of.
Bran is just like being
an active role in everything and trying human flesh through Summer. I can relate to that himself. Though. Why not? Give it a shot.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Let me break every single taboo.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's so young. He's like, I don't even know these taboos yet.
He doesn't know they're taboos. But it's funny because in that book, you get Varamyr's chapter where he points out what all the taboos are.
Right.
And then throughout the course of Dance with Dragons, Bran just breaks every single one of them.
Yeah. Dude, that stuff with Varamyr was so cool. So cool. And like how much he covets what John has with Ghost, and just Ghost in general being like a sire or a kingly, just like the top of the line animal that he could use as a host for his consciousness. Everything is so interesting. I love the sort of premeditation on George R. R. Martin's behalf to be like, you guys are gonna really think that this is cool, but to have done it so long ago, I feel neat. It's like, thank you for doing your job. I'm just really excited at that point, on that fact alone, thinking about what sort of stuff that he's anticipated for us to sink our teeth into for the Winds of Winter and beyond at this point, because we're in a whole different era of the world right now. Cause that was the stuff he thought was cool back then. I say back then, I mean, all the years ago when he was publishing those books then. So think of all the new stuff that we have to factor into our sort of global consciousness. And he's like, let me try this out. And I think that he will, especially now with all this time. It's not like he rushed to get the Winds of Winter out during the series because it was huge. You know, like he's still so right now could that. Be like, I have a new idea and put that in right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool.
Then he has to rewrite everything and then we're back.
Yeah. Back to square one. Like next Halloween, we're having these same conversations.
Here's my question though, as we're like talking about Firewhites and John coming back to life and all this kind of stuff. I mean, we haven't even really touched on the whole other side of the spectrum potentially, like the others, whites in general, and kind of, if there are opposites to each other, like how, like if there's any similarities that we know between these two types of magic and these two types of beings, and kind of how they maybe compare or how they're so wildly different from each other. And then how we might see the others, you know, showing up and flexing their own different kinds of power. Basically if there's a fire equivalent to the others, I don't know, but that's
what I wonder, like, is Melisandre the, I don't know, is she the fire equivalent to the others? I mean, the sort of like the embodiment of, I guess the others, I would say, because they're not really undead themselves. They're more like the embodiment of ice magic. Right. Or ice made flesh, right? So is Melisandre fire made flesh?
And that's
slightly
of.
Different than being a fire white, maybe.
I don't really get it. I feel like we're using sort of like first level terrestrial terms to describe like early medicine, you know, to describe something that we don't really understand when it comes down to there being some kind of governing force within the world that might all be one thing or might be something that has opposites to each other. I'm not sure. But like we're calling it ice magic or we're calling it fire magic, but in some way, like they're able to access or harness or some kind of lensing effect to focus the energy that I don't know what it has to do specifically with resurrection. But as we talk about it and I hear us talking about what information we have available to us at this point, it seems like that's what it sounds like to me, that we're describing something at the early stages of understanding because of the information that we have. And it seems familiar to me of things that from our real world that we now have more information on that we're able to sort of fill in the gaps on. Like we know to wash our hands because it carries pathogens that might infect open wounds, you know, but like, I feel like we're talking about sort of technology within Westeros of the magic in a way that is before that point of understanding sort of micro, like things that we can't see, germs, things that we can't see. And like that,
right.
These life forms are able to access that technology. But I don't know if they're different. They might be though. They might be. Like, to me, it seems like Melisandre's ability to use the Shadow Baby so early in the series indicates that it's not just a practical understanding we were talking about with Qyburn, but that there actually is some aspect of all of this that requires some kind of spell work in a way.
Well, we know for sure that the others can, like, they are capable of resurrecting. Like, I feel like we've got, like, I'm losing my train of thought, but like the most prevalent example is we have.
So, yes, he did it. Yes, I texted. Yes, okay. I'm talking about very important things, ghost sir.
I was like, why am I losing my train of thought? I love the guest appearance.
That was awesome. Sorry. What were we talking about?
It doesn't matter anymore.
Oh, being the same thing or not.
What I was trying to say, I'm actually grateful that I get a little bit of a redo. So thank you for that. What I'm trying to say is that the others creating whites is like the most straightforward example we have of resurrection,
master
of the dead,
slave,
yeah, right, in A Song of Ice and Fire, yeah, and you know, we don't necessarily understand like what that relationship is, but we know for a fact that is something that's happening,
right?
For sure.
It's like how, mm-hmm, if Varamyr or if Bran, let's say like powerful wargs, are able to put their consciousness into a host life form, what if there's a collective consciousness that is behind whatever the White Walkers are doing? And it's essentially the way that the show sort of used it was putting it inside of a character, the Night King, where you kill him, you kill everyone. What if it's a global consciousness, or let's say it is the Night King, where essentially they're able to actually war into willing hosts or unwilling hosts because they're dead, and they're able to animate all of these things simultaneously, the same way that a warg like Bran would do.
Yeah. Just like, I don't know, like splinters of their consciousness go
out.
Ow.
What if your aunt figures this out?
Oh.
I mean, there's a lot of things that I don't want your aunt to figure
no
out.
Shit, dude. No. That right there is what it's all about. There's a lot of things at this point in the story. Could you imagine how mad we would become, all of us collectively, as a just a world reading these stories, if Euron Greyjoy becomes someone that's like, you know what? Kicks down the door and starts understanding how to use that form of magic when no one else does.
Well, like, having
right,
this,
exactly, your face is right.
Having somebody control this, like, collective masses, and it's like, you, I mean, you reference the Night King, and again, the way the show does it, and like the way that ends, it's a very terrifying thing that's very prevalent in the storyline of, you've got these zombie, single-minded things that we don't really know how to kill. I mean, we do, but like, we don't really have the ability to actually do it in a large scale. And so I like the idea. I think, I don't know, like, Euron's like the guy. I don't know, but.
You like that idea?
No, I'm changing my mind. But anyway, I don't know what I'm trying
it
to
is
say.
Kind of
I'm
like
getting confused, but.
A little like. On the fence of like, ugh, it sucks, but it could be cool.
But this idea of like a collective, I mean, that's a very terrifying thing. And watching that play out, that's like a real genuine threat with this, like, these single-minded collective things that are just like out to get you. I mean, that's the most like
Euron
black and white
using
evil.
That?
Either Euron using that, or them, or like the others are able to control the whites in some way, and being able to use them on like a less collective way.
When, I mean, we know that they can keep their, you know, so let's, you know, they're whites, they're undead servants, you know, they can kind of keep them in stasis, I guess. Cause you had, well, you had Othar and Jaefer at first,
right,
who were, you know, appeared dead. Then they came through the wall, and then they woke up. I mean, something made them wake up, but we really understand that. And then you see when Bran is going to the cave, they're all hiding under the snow, and they all just kind of burst out. But it's not really clear that they were like...
You're onto something right now, though. You're talking about the places in which that they were around, like the wall being a bar from that, like people that died south of the wall don't resurrect as White Walkers,
right,
or as whites, and people inside of the cave don't either. So like, why are they right outside the cave? And why are they
right outside
the wall? Presumably
they did.
If the trees weren't cleared away, wouldn't they be right there? Or if the Night's Watch weren't there ranging and patrolling, wouldn't they be right there outside the wall?
So what's controlling them, you know, as they're lying under the snow, I guess it's not entirely clear that they're, you know, just lying there kind of like, you know, waiting or that they're not controlling themselves. But then you hear about these dead things in the water at Hardhome. And what's up with that? I mean, are they just like...
Think about the Watcher outside of the Mines of Moria. Probably the same energy.
Yes.
But through the technology.
Or the dead marshes also in Tolkien.
Exactly.
With the faces, and they're just like dead guys looking up at you, you know?
They're kind of like sentinels. They're just a defense mechanism for someone.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to understand
what
that thing is. Exactly. But what's behind that thing that activates it? Or who set the trap for that thing to activate it?
Yeah.
In the case of Lord of the Rings, the Watcher is a life form that's left over from a period that's a warring time, much more ancient in the current Third Age. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we can throw that one probably out for now. Let's say maybe that is a leftover thing. And
kind of like, yeah, I wondered, you know, are they something left over from from the Doom, or are they, you know,
do you think the Doom could have reached that far?
Well,
do we have any other like geological indicators of like ash or like sediment or things?
There was a big explosion up there at some point. I don't know if it's related to the Doom, and I'm going to reveal, yeah, that there something has something happened at Hardhome in the past, some kind of.
Whether that was like a magical or like a.
Yeah, we don't know if it was a geological thing, if it was a magical thing. Have these bodies been there all this time?
Right.
You know, or are they just sort of like planted there by the others most recently?
It's probably more likely the latter, the first point. Yeah.
The first one. They've been there for just kind of like floating in the water.
And we're here like looking for significance, trying to tie it to whatever the White Walkers are doing. And they don't even have a leader in the books at this point. There's no like fantastical Night King with a cool sword killing people.
Can I read the Hardhome thing? I want to read Cotter Pike's message because I think that kind of ties in everything.
Do it.
So his letter from Hardhome, this is what it says. It says, at Hardhome with six ships, wild seas, Blackbird lost with all hands, two Lysenia ships driven around Skye and Talon taking water. Very bad here. Wildlings eating their own dead. Dead things in the woods.
Oof.
Ravosi captains will only take women, children on their ships. Witch women call us slavers. Attempted to take Stormcrow, defeated. Six crew dead, many wildlings. Eight ravens left. Dead things in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Send help by land. Seas wracked by storms. From Talon, the hand of Maesir Armin, whatever. I mean, so we get like this. That's the description that we have of what's happening there now.
Chilling.
And the dead things in the woods, dead things in the waters. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about. Have they been there and wait, or are they being sent there? You know, I think both are.
Yeah. Or are they being created fresh by something that's there? You know, are these just dead wildlings that are, you know, he says the wildlings are eating their dead. Oh.
Better than them turning back into whites, though, that they have to fight.
I guess. I mean, that's,
so,
you know,
at that point, when you start to break it up, if you, so let's say fire is considered some sort of alchemical process where the magic is canceled out. Is there some kind of magical process in eating as well? It seems like just, if we go back to the Kyber and more practical aspect of all this, just breaking down the flesh apart from the nervous system allows you to separate it from whatever reanimation technology there is.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Like, if you take the flesh away from the nerves, then it can't come back to you and fight you and kill you. So if you eat it or burn it.
So if you eat it,
that's like the most safest way to
consume.
Unless, like, you know, however the digestive system does or doesn't break that down, like, are you reanimated, like, from the inside?
Oh, man.
You know, I don't know.
Is it like a virus? Yeah, is it like a virus, which isn't that... Which
COVID.
Zombie, there's a recent zombie movie or story that it was a virus, right?
I don't know.
The one that we're living through?
No, is there something where you eat something, it turns into something? That might be something.
I don't know.
I can't remember. No. What was I watching? It was a bad old movie that they remade. What's his name? The guy from Inglourious Bastards. Anyway,
I don't know.
Someone knows that's listening. You know, he played the bear Jew with the bat. He does horror movies. He remade a horror movie twice. He did the same one twice. And I watched he did the same movie like 10 or 12 years apart.
I
the
like
same
that
movie.
Energy.
I know. And I watched it and they, the woods, something like that. It had like an infectious disease. It was in the water though. Either way, it was a bloodborne illness.
Right.
I don't know how that connects to this. You see, there's weird stuff going on, but I really think these conversations are important though because we don't have books. We don't have new books to connect all the dots. So understanding the sort of God mode behind what the author is doing might help us get to some point of understanding it better. And it seems more likely that it's all connected in one source rather than a bunch of different disconnected sources. So can I just take a moment to zoom out from where we are at the north of Westeros? If Mikora was able to do this in Slaver's Bay, then it's not necessarily geographically... Like there's no source of power that's emanating. That was not you. That sneezed. Bless you. If it's not, if we don't have to be close to the wall to deal with this issue or to mess with the same power that is, might be the kind of thing that is behind what brings back Jon Snow, then how important is it to there being some kind of magical source radiating from the sort of flesh of the earth, and more so in the understanding of the people behind what they can do themselves as living beings?
I'm going to build off your question a little bit because we're about time where we need to wrap. But I think that
we have to go for 3 hours on this, guys. Really?
As we're talking about,
there's a lot left to talk about.
As we're talking about, like significance of where this power is coming from, whether that's like based in locale or like learned magic, you know, all these different things you've been talking about. What does that mean for the series? Like, how important are these things, these undead things, going to be when we talk endgame? I know obviously John is somebody that is probably like the most important as we talk about people coming back to life. But like, how important is A, like understanding the mechanics of these different magics?
Or the dragons.
Or B, understanding the mechanics of this. Or B, I don't remember the third thing. But how much do we
need? Though.
I just got distracted by
my
it.
My bad.
How much?
Bye.
Yeah, how much do I know? Whatever. You guys know what I'm trying to say.
I know what you're trying to say.
I'm trying to do a cool wrap-up question.
It was a cool one. I liked it.
All right, I have one. Yeah.
What up, Tara?
There's Tara. Oh, I can't hear you. You're muted.
I'm just popping in for the end of this.
What do you think about this? One final question, maybe?
Do we have any predictions for future zombies? Like people that... You know, are we going to see somebody that we know and love become an undead?
Aside from the people we already know and love that are undead.
Besides the people we already know and love who are undead people. Okay, the obvious, but anyone else?
Like maybe dragons that we
aren't,
know and love?
Aren't they maybe that, though, dragons? From the petrified eggs, right? Isn't the sort of same thing happening with them after what happened in the tent with Mary? Maybe they're like a shadow sort of what they would be. Like maybe that's part of the reason why that's what their personalities are. They're so tameable to a Targaryen that's been disconnected from her.
If the show was right and we got an ice dragon, I guess that would satisfy what I was wondering is if we would see any people become these kind of ice whites, like, you know, reanimated by the others in a most horrific way. Cause you know, I guess a dragon would do it for me, but I mean, if it was a character that you loved and they just got turned into one of these shambling ice zombies, you'd be
especially. Wait, I have two things to think about. That one, another showism is like, another showism would be like, you know, when Arya in the crypts, when like people being reanimated down there, like that's kind of cool. If that's like.
They take the iron away from them because they need to use it to fight, and all of a sudden they all come back.
Exactly.
I love what you said about the alloy, though. Like iron versus obsidian and how it affects them being resurrected or not. That's beautiful. And it's probably something to do with the molecular structure of all that George is like factoring into.
Yeah. And maybe somebody we love, like maybe somebody we know being animated in the ice way, like would help us better understand kind of the mechanics of that.
And, yes.
Like, see it more similarities between like fire, whites, and all that kind of stuff.
I definitely feel like we're going to see like the characters are going to see some of their friends turned into whites, and we're going to read like them seeing like I that's one thing that I think is probably likely to happen.
I think you're right, because I think it won't have the same impact if it's just like so far the people that have been whited that you've seen that you recognize were all kind of like bad guys, like Chet and a bunch of the people that were
so it's
part
like very
of
black
mutiny,
and white evil.
You
know? Yeah. It's not this gray evil.
Yeah,
you
know,
see
no one that you really cared about that you saw.
Yeah.
The closest you got and you didn't really see him was Tormund's son. You know, he talks about having to kill his son. But I think that's a good point to that we'll see more of that.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to bring Walking Dead into this because it's gone to such shit. But you know, that's one thing about The Walking Dead. It's like you don't really care about the walkers, obviously, when they're just like rando walkers. But like every once in a while, you see, especially the ones where you haven't seen this character for a while, and then you see them as a walker, and it's like, oh wow, that's actually like that's a little hit. That's a little
it's
hit
like
right
Bill
there.
Murray in Zombieland. Yeah. You're like, wait a second, I know that's a zombie. That's fucking Bill Murray. Oh. So it's going to be happening in the story, both meta and physically. Like, we'll have people that are being blended in ways where it's like, I don't know who to support, but at the same time, we're also going to have, there'd be strange resurrections and mixing of people being of varying levels of dead and undead at the same time. That's perfect. Way to weave that in for us. Mm-hmm. That's great.
All right. I'm going to let this one last question come in just because I like it. Lonely Cat wants to know, will anything happen with the 79 Sentinels? And then once you guys have answered that, we'll sign off for the evening.
Well, you know, there they are, frozen bodies in the wall. If the wall falls or they somehow get, you know, like any of those bodies in the ice cells that John has, I guess they could certainly be, you know, they weren't burned properly.
So
Or eaten, as we were saying. Nobody did either of the two approved methods of their bodies.
The only two that we know about so far.
Speaking of eating people, you know, harken back to last week's cannibalism webcast, you know. So if anybody watching this hasn't watched that one, it is on our YouTube channel. Please check
it out. They all sort of, you know, cross over each other.
These next few weeks. Well, maybe not next week so much with the Curse of Harrenhal, but
Spoiler.
There's more eating people.
Any last thoughts from you guys before I wrap this up?
What we said at the beginning, which is like, there's more questions than answers to any of this kind of stuff. And so I feel like we just asked 7 million questions, but.
Thank you for doing this because we all miss the con, and this is something at least. And I really appreciate
it. I know. I feel really bad. Like, it being Halloween weekend, you know, I knew people were going to be with their families and stuff like that. So I didn't want to do a full weekend of programming. I mean, honestly, I also couldn't really do a full weekend of programming like we did back in April. But yeah, let's just keep our like fingers and toes and everything else crossed for April and, you know, stay safe and everything. And yeah, like we had fun last week. I've listened to been taking part in the chat for most of this. Has been really great. Thank you guys so much again for joining. I slipped up. I mentioned that we are doing one next Friday as well, which we haven't, if you were a Patreon, you actually would have known about these weeks ago, just saying, or a patron, sorry. So you can check us out on patreon.com/IceAndFireCon. So next week's is again a Friday. This will be November 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to be talking about the Curse of Harrenhal. So keeping up the sort of creepy vibe that we had last week and this week. And then we'll take a break depending on what goes on the rest of this year, beginning of next year, I don't necessarily foresee us doing a bunch of virtual content like this, but we might do, you know, one or two things here or there because we've really enjoyed, just kind of keeping the fam like involved and stuff like that. So again, thank you, Lady Gwyn and Hannah and Zach for helping out and joining us tonight. It was really great, really fun to listen to and take part in it. So you guys have a wonderful night, everybody. Have a happy Halloween. Don't eat any people and stay alive and stuff. So wash your hands, wear a mask, social distance. I love you guys.
That's right. Bye.
Thank you guys. That was fun.
That was so much fun. I'm glad we got to have that convo.